It used to be you would go to your CPA, and if you mentioned Bitcoin, that, you know, you get scoffed at. We're getting to a point now where you really can't ignore it. You know, it's similar to like AI. Like, if you're not looking into those emerging technologies as a financial professional, there's just a higher probability you're going to get left behind.
So you mentioned earlier that CPAs don't really study money all that much. How much time have you actually spent trying to understand what Bitcoin is, both for yourself and as a way to help your clients?
It's been a lot of hours. The incentive is not necessarily to understand what money is. I don't really need to understand the underlying unit necessarily. I just know that people really don't want to pay taxes, and it's better for their business and their family if they can keep more of their money. And so we're going to try to maximize the tax savings that they have.
Do you think that we're going to get to a price this year that's worthy of people paying attention to it?
I definitely could see us going to a crazy price, like $500,000.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Playbook, where we discuss proven strategies for using Bitcoin in your business. I'm your host, Josh Friedemann, and our guest today is Jordan Guess, who's the founder of Bitmint, which is Bitcoin Accounting Automated. Today on the show, we're going to be discussing his product, as well as the transparency of the United States government's books and the future of Bitcoin as a unit of account. Here's Jordan. Jordan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.
So I'd like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and give us some insight for our own lives. So you ready for these?
Yeah, sure.
Question number one is this: when and how did you first learn about Bitcoin?
I first learned about Bitcoin probably, you know, in college. Friend was, you know, holding it, trading it, ran it all the way up to 20K and dropped back down. I was like, oh, wow, he's an idiot. But I really heard about it in 2020. With the Sailor series that Robert Breedlove put out. And that's when I really went down the rabbit hole of, I need to take this seriously. I need to study a lot of things, starting with, you know, Austrian economics and gold and why Bitcoin is better money than gold. And even asking that simple, very simple question that Robert posed that, you know, I think is going to transform how we think about things over the next couple of decades, which is, what is money? And my background being in accounting, the fact that that was never even really brought up in any of my courses is pretty telling. So
question number two is this: what's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
Just in my industry, I always think about the ledger side of, you know, the ledger side of the Bitcoin network. And so the immutability of the ledger, not being able to go back and change anything, is quite an advancement, at least in the accounting industry. You know, you go back to big scandals like Enron, where they were able to change what was recorded in the books and cook the books so that it represented things in a way that wasn't true to reality. And with Bitcoin, given the consensus mechanism of how all the transactions are recorded in a long string of blocks, there's no way to do that, which is pretty cool. So it basically, I don't know if it fully gets rid of fraud, but at least it gets rid of, call it 99% of fraud that can be recorded on the ledger. So
question number three: what's the Bitcoin resource you most recommend to other people?
So there's a guy on Twitter named, Armin the Parman. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He has an article that I pushed to a lot of people, called it a not too technical overview of this thing, Bitcoin. And I send that article out, definitely several times a year. But as the price pumps and people, you know, reach out to me because they know I'm in the space, I just feel like that's a good, kind of a good precursor summary of what Bitcoin is, and it doesn't get too technical, you know, so it doesn't scare people away, kind of thing.
Question number four: beyond Bitcoin, what's a resource, tool, or idea that's been helpful to you or your work recently?
I would say I've been using, like a lot of people, I've been using ChatGPT, the regular, what people, you know as like the search function, but I've also been diving into the API and plugging the API into Zapier and connecting ChatGPT basically with my email, and with some of the different just tech platforms that I use within my own business. And it's been very helpful. The only thing that I have to continually watch out for is obviously I can't give it access to things that have, sensitive data. And generally email shouldn't have that unless, and just so everyone knows, I do like tax work for people. So generally it's just like questions that people are asking. They're not supposed to be sending me, tax returns and stuff like that. So, but I've found it helpful so far that it's, you can give it a prompt within the API and it can craft back responses. And then the responses can actually live in your drafts folder before they ever get sent out so that you can, of course, go over them and make sure that everything looks good before it actually gets sent out to a client. So,
and how frequently do you find that you have to actually make edits to something? Are they almost always, what they need to be? Or do you have to go in there and generally change up at least a couple of things?
I would say it's 80-20. So probably about 20% of the time I need to make an adjustment just because it didn't, it's just something that only I would know about the client, right? Or unless I gave it access, for example, to the client files, which again, it's not to that level of security that I feel comfortable doing that. If someone's requesting something, then I have to go in and adjust that. Or if it's something specific to the client situation, that again, unless it had all the recordings of our meeting notes and all that kind of stuff, it's still not all the way there. But if it's a general tax question, can I claim my kid this year, and they give enough detail and context, it does a really good job of that kind of stuff.
Now we have our final, what we call our arbitrary but insightful question. And it's this: as a general life principle, is it better to ask why or why not?
So at first I was thinking the why not, but then the more I've thought about it, I think it's better to ask why. And the reason for that, I think as you get older and further along in your career, you want to start saying no much more than you say yes. And so I think asking yourself the question, why would I do this? It seems a little bit more of a mature response versus my knee jerk was the why not? The why wouldn't I go try this and see what happens? And so I think in some ways, I think it depends on what stage of your life or career you're kind of in, because at the beginning, you really should be asking that question, why not go try this and do that? And then as you progress a little bit, being a bit more critical about how you spend your time is definitely important. And you have to ask the question, why would I do this?
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth, wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at Velus Commerce. Let's make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. So, Jordan, we're here today to talk about a new product that's in development, a company you started, Bitmint. I'm hoping you can give us an overview of this and help us to understand what this is helping, you know, individuals and businesses to do, because you're one of the only people who's really trying to solve this problem at the moment, and it's sort of a big problem for Bitcoiners.
Yeah, so I would say the first piece that I would talk about is just data feeds, right? So accounting today is you're really trying to make sure you capture as much of financial data as you possibly can, and generally in terms of transactions. So if a small business, if they're collecting revenue, maybe they're a coffee shop, and they are collecting in store at a point of sale. They are also collecting online. Maybe they sell some bags of beans on a Shopify site or something like that. And then maybe say they're also invoicing some of their wholesale customers through QuickBooks or another invoicing system. You know, we've got to track all of that. That's all income on the income side. And then we've got all the things that are going out. You know, some things are on recurring transactions, like just paying on the credit card. We pay things ACH. All those things, like, they get captured in certain ways. And let's just pick QuickBooks, because that's what a lot of small businesses use. You know, how do we make sure that all of that gets recorded and recorded as efficiently as possible? Because, you know, we live in a different world than we did when I first started in accounting, which was very manual entry. I mean, seriously, someone going line by line on a bank statement and taking that info and entering it into QuickBooks desktop at the time. So all that to say, you bring Bitcoin into that picture. How do you pull the data from the blockchain or from a Lightning channel into your QuickBooks, for example? It's not super straightforward. And you start talking to, well, anyone who has to work with a Bitcoin accountant or a Bitcoin accountant themselves, and it's a headache. You end up having to parse through lots of CSV, you know, Excel files. And you have to, you know, organize that data in a way that you can then import it into QuickBooks. And so I would say what we're trying to solve at Bitmint is kind of twofold. There's that data feed piece of just trying to automate the flow of transactions happening and flowing into your accounting software, or at least into a queue, that which is how it works right now with like a Plaid, you know, connects to your bank, to QuickBooks, for example. We're basically trying to build a little bit of a Plaid type of product, but for Bitcoin, Lightning, and eCash. So that's one, but I actually got ahead of myself. The very first piece for me that I saw is like, wow, this is a huge gap, is there's no bank statement, which, you know, most people don't really care about a bank statement. You know, maybe you check it or you need to send it to your mortgage guy or something like that. But for the most part, people don't really download their bank statements. At least young people don't. And so, but accountants, we use the bank statement as a pretty powerful tool to check our work once we think we've got everything entered into the accounting software for a month. And so the fact that I've got nothing to check against in Bitcoin world, other than obviously you can go check on chain, you could go to a block explorer, but most accountants were not, you know, we're not technical enough to really understand. And as the ecosystem continues to expand, you're asking a boomer CPA to go read the block. You know, it's just not going to happen, right? So the very first thing we've developed is just a bank statement product. So you would plug in your XPUB or you'd plug in your different addresses. And we more or less, it's pretty simple. We just take the data that's on chain and we put it into a statement that looks like something you would get from Chase or Fidelity, showing your beginning balance, you know, what went in, what went in, what went out, and your ending balance, and then all those transactions, so that an accountant could go in to the reconcile screen on QuickBooks, plug in the different, you know, plug in the ending balance and the ending date, and actually check to make sure there's no duplicates and there's nothing missing in the books. So I'll pause there, but those are the kind of two things that we worked on in the last 6 months.
What's interesting about this is that this is something that all sorts of CPAs who may not be Bitcoiners could really benefit from, just because increasingly there are going to be clients out there who are Bitcoiners. Have you talked with people who are not yet Bitcoiners in your industry who see the value of this or already are sensing some sort of need for this? Or do you find that Bitcoiners find Bitcoiner CPAs and tend to just work with Bitcoiner CPAs?
It's mostly the latter, but for example, you know, I've been talked to a lot of CPAs, and one guy comes to mind who's a little bit older, and you know, he's like a lot of people who aren't in the Bitcoin space. They're just like, I just don't understand Bitcoin. I can't wrap my head around it. But really what they're saying there is, I just have not spent the time. Cause you know, these are smart people. If they really wanted to understand something, they could. And it's becoming less so, but it used to be, even in the last couple of years, you would go to your CPA, and if you mentioned Bitcoin, you know, I've heard this from other people that, you know, you get scoffed at, or, you know, there's a lot of hesitancy and just, hey, you should probably get out of that. You know, that's a scam. That's a Ponzi. And again, coming from people who should, you know, really should look into this. And I think, but they hadn't yet. And we're getting to a point now where you really can't ignore it. And there's so much opportunity in this space that, you know, it's similar to like AI. Like, if you're not looking into those emerging technologies as a financial professional, there's just a higher probability you're going to get left behind. And yes, more and more people become Bitcoiners and they're saying, hey, my financial professional, be it my advisor or my accountant, they don't understand this tech. I want to go work with someone who does. And so I think there's a good incentive for people to start learning, and we can kind of get into that at some point too, but I think that there need to be resources for those professionals to grab onto, so that, because you know, you and I both know there's a sea of information out there, and a lot of it's not great.
So you mentioned earlier that CPAs don't really study money all that much. Obviously, indirectly, CPAs do. Do you think that, have you found that there's a benefit for you in your work understanding money better? And also, how much time have you actually spent across the last 4 years, maybe a little, I guess, 5 years now, trying to understand what Bitcoin is, both for yourself and as a way to help your clients?
So I'll take the second question first. It's been a lot of hours. You know, it's probably been in the hundreds of hours. And I don't know exactly, you know, there's the entertainment piece, you know, listening to Preston Pish talk to someone about, you know, all kinds of different stuff. Like, some of that I'm like, this is entertainment for me, and just, you know, it's fun to kind of think about like, what could the price do, and just hearing the news of the day and all that kind of stuff. And then there's much more technical pieces that you really have to sit down and focus. And so I would say, you know, I got a node up and running fairly early on, maybe in the first 1 to 2 years of becoming, you know, of allocating substantially into Bitcoin. And then, you know, from there, I've kind of, you know, done the whole like BitAx mining stuff to learn a little bit more about that. And then also I've learned a lot about the multisig stuff. And so like doing the multisig, for example, and rolling the dice and all that kind of stuff, like really getting into the weeds, you can't really do that with, you know, without like focusing really, really intensely. So, and some of that is because I could listen to someone talk about, oh, this is how you set up a multisig. But until you're like, you know, sitting in front of your computer, you've got Sparrow open and you've got your, you know, you've got all your different hardware devices, it's a little bit different. Right. And so I think if I had any encouragement for people, and I know people say this all the time, but just go try it, go buy a cold card and really just play around with not a lot of money. Right. Just so you can kind of get comfortable. And I think that that really sets you apart from someone who only, you know, listens to podcasts and like understands things in their head, but has not done it with their hands yet. And maybe, and it still blows my mind, you know, the number of people who are Bitcoiners that for whatever reason are still holding their coins on Coinbase. I would just encourage everyone. It's not as hard as you think, but it does take time to actually to learn. So, and then your other question about learning about money, I think it's all incentive based. And so in my work and in like, for example, financial advisor in their line of work, the incentive is not necessarily to understand what money is. And so you basically learn within, again, the incentive structure that you're in. So, for example, for me, I learned how to save people money on taxes. I don't really need to understand the underlying unit necessarily. I just know that people really don't want to pay taxes, and it's better for their business and their family if they can keep more of their money. And so we're going to, you know, we're going to try to maximize the tax savings that they have yearly and, you know, ultimately their lifetime tax savings. And similarly with a financial advisor, they have no incentive to understand what at root, what money is, because even if they, let's say they did want to go down the rabbit hole and they become a Bitcoiner, well, now what are they going to do? Are they going to encourage their client to pull all their money out of the AUM that they manage right now and put it into cold storage Bitcoin? It's like, well, how did they feed their families then? And so they're very much incentivized to say, let's stay in the system of the 60-40, or at least they have been. Maybe that's falling apart. I don't know if you saw the 10 years ripping today. So all that today, I think it's all incentive based. And yeah.
Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with the Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. So I'm sure you know this as a Bitcoiner. Many people listening to this will know it as well, but money tends to go through this 3-phase process of store of value, medium of exchange, then unit of account. Do you think that Bitcoin is ever going to get to that unit of account spot?
Yeah, I definitely think it could. It's just, it really is a matter of how willing Bitcoiners are to spend their Bitcoin, which I know is like a very hot topic these days, you know, with the whole stake and shake thing, which I listened to some of your all's episode that came out late last week. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that there is a large cohort of people that are like, I'm not spending my Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And I think if you stay in that lane forever, you never leave the store of value. You can always be a store of value, but you're not going, we could achieve so much more. And so, and it's been an interesting thing. You know, some of the pushback that I've gotten from friends who, you know, we just don't see eye to eye on all kinds of things. But one of it is like, well, how could you have a base money that you're never incentivized to spend, right? Like, how do you have an economy that actually flourishes in that world where everyone has this like ultimate incentive to just save all of their money and never spend it? And what does the economy look like? Do we have an economy that actually shrinks over time? And I guess you have to measure, it's depending on what you're measuring in, but say you're measuring still in dollars, but everyone is just hodling, right? So I think that that is an interesting thing that we do have to tackle. If we don't tackle that, then you could see I haven't thought about it maybe enough, but it does seem a little bit scarier than the world we live in right now, where it, just because of what we're used to this, like this growth model, right? Of things always, everything's expanding. And so I think that that is something that we have to be careful of. And if people are not spending their Bitcoin, then we do fall into that, versus people spend their Bitcoin, but they're earning in Bitcoin, or they spend their Bitcoin and they turn right around and they buy, you know, they basically use the dollars they would have paid for their, you know, burger and shake, and they buy Bitcoin right back. And so, and then they just add that back to their stash. So in Sats terms, they didn't lose any, you know, they didn't actually lose any savings, but they still got to transact in it, which is, that's a big use case, obviously. The peer-to-peer cash that Satoshi wrote about in his white paper, I think that was what he intended it to ultimately be. So, and then to get to the unit of account, I think that takes a lot of time of spending Bitcoin, right? I mean, even if you ask me, like, what is my house worth in sats, I'd have to, like, go do the math, right?
Sure.
Whereas that's not the case with dollars. Everyone's so, like, the marketing of the dollar has been so strong that, you know, right off the bat, everyone knows, oh, the average, you know, home price in the US right now is like $500,000, right? Or $500,000. So, whereas if you try to convert that to sats, maybe it's a little bit easier now that we're close to 100, but, you know, it's still not the easiest, like, mental math. And so I think it takes a lot of time to be like, oh yeah, my burger is, you know, was 7,500 sats. And that is translates to how many in dollars. So I don't know. I think there's a world where we never get there just because people are not, they're lazy enough that they're not going to do all that mental math. And there's probably a world where enough people are like, I just don't want to spend, you know, maybe the incentive is not there to spend my Bitcoin. I'd rather spend my dollars or spend a stable coin and just keep trying to save as much in Bitcoin as I can.
Sure. So I'm curious to know what you think is kind of that next level that gets people to, people who are not yet Bitcoiners, people just who are living their daily lives. What's that next level that will that it will take to get them to pay attention to Bitcoin? And how soon do you think we could get there?
It's a sad answer, but it's the price. It really is the price. I mean, there's no better marketing tool. I know so many smart people that I've tried to talk to them about Bitcoin and tried to explain, and it's a sad thing, but it's true that people are busy, and so they're not worried about what money is in the first place, which I think is, that's going according to plan for the central bankers. And then even if they are smart, they have that whole I missed the boat thing. And it really is a humility kind of thing. You have to be humble and have the humility to say, this technology is just better than what I'm using today. And so, sure, so-and-so got in at a much better price than I did, but I still want to get on the lifeboat. I love the Lawrence Lepard, and I don't know if he stole it from someone else, but where he's saying, like, yeah, I, you know, we're all in the sinking Titanic, and I got my seat on the life raft, you know, at a much better price than you're going to have to pay. But you can still get a seat on the life raft. I mean, why would you not go ahead if you have the ability to buy a seat or buy several seats? Then you should. And you shouldn't really complain that, you know, oh, well, so-and-so got it for, you know, better than I did. So, but I think that what, to answer your question of like what it takes is, I still don't think people understand that they're on the Titanic. They think, or at least they think that they're on the Titanic before it hit the iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously we know we've hit the iceberg and we're going down, and they do a good job of hiding that fact from people. You know, they keep people distracted with, you know, kind of the political news of the day. And there's all so many shiny objects in today's world that make it just tough to do deep focus on what is money, why does my life feel so much more expensive, and I can't get ahead, you know, unless you have family. Like the number of people I know that if they didn't have someone kind of behind the curtain, right, that was kind of helping, it's just hard. It's hard today in today's world to really have that American dream of, you know, one income household and, you know, work really hard, but still be able to support a family of, you know, four or more. And I think people are waking up, but then you talk to people and they think, well, you know, it's XRP or, you know, something like that, where it's the whole unit bias. So all that to say, it's a hard thing, but it's it's going to be number go up. And for people who are in the crypto space, measuring their cryptocurrency in BTC terms
as a unit of account.
I think that's a good thing for them to do as well. But they don't, a lot of them don't. even if you show them the ETH and Bitcoin chart, for whatever reason, they won't make the jump back over. So it's a sad thing. It really is. I don't know. I don't know if you have any better advice to Orangeville people.
I mean, people will say this all the time. Even when I ask people, you know, question number three, which is the Bitcoin resource you most recommend to other people, they'll say, you know, the question there is like, what's the thing that you find yourself recommending the most? But a lot of people will say, and rightfully so, that it really depends on the person. So I think it just depends the conversations you have, their interests, things like that. I agree with you, though. For a lot of people who just aren't paying too much attention, it's the price. And a lot of people thought that $100,000 would probably be that price that really it's like, wow, six figure Bitcoin. That doesn't seem to be the case. And now 100,000 Bitcoin, just because we've been there a couple times and, you know, we dropped down and now we're back at it. It feels normal. Do you think that we're going to get to a price this year that's worthy of people in their minds, worthy of them paying attention to it? Or do you think it's kind of years down the road?
I definitely could see us going to a crazy price, like $500,000 this year. I think that would be, for guys like me that got in, you know, really deployed, you know, a higher percentage of net worth in like 2021, we still haven't like gotten that like euphoric.
As me, you know, too.
It is crazy to see that like, oh, we were in the, we were not doing well in, you know, we were down in the 16,000 range. And now to say, you know, last night we hit 107. I mean, that is a crazy run up. But I think since it ticked up over so much time that it didn't feel euphoric. If we did some crazy, I can't wrap my head around, I guess. It'd be awesome if it did, obviously. And I do see a very clear path for us to do that. But I'm trying to keep, you know, there's always a lot of hype. And so I try to keep my expectations pretty reasonable. And man, I would love to see those expectations get ripped to shreds, you know, on the upside. That'd be awesome.
So I'm hoping that you'll be able to combine your Bitcoiner and CPA experience here. But I'm curious to know what you think and why on these questions. First of all, the transparency of Bitcoin versus the U.S. government.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, the fact that we don't know where our money is going is from a government standpoint is pretty crazy. You can foresee a world where, you know, certain transactions on the governmental level could be transparent for people to see. And I think that would potentially help solve the budget problem, because right now, where everything is just really, even for the guys that are digging into it right now with Elon and his team of people, the fact that no one knows where the money is going, I that seems very very curious to me. So, if you had something like a transparent ledger like with Bitcoin, where everyone could go and see addresses, they could track the movement of money. And see, you know, is it actually paying a good actor? Is it paying a bad actor? Where did it go after that? Is it funneling back to someone's family? I just think if you just opened up the transparency, I think a lot of the questions and the conspiracy type of stuff that we see in today's world, that would all be quashed pretty quickly, because it's like, it's out there. You know, if you bring it to light, then everyone kind of can see it. Whereas we are stuck in this, it is a very wacky world we find ourselves in, where I would say both sides of the political spectrum at this point have become addicted to the conspiracy of the day. And I think that there is good reason to like question things, but it's gotten so extreme now just because there's no trust. There's such an extreme lack of trust. And so I think it's one of the only ways that all of these institutions can really gain any of that trust back is to just open it all up and let everyone see inside. And Bitcoin is a way to do that. So, but then there's obviously the privacy concerns of certain things, and you know, there's ways to do that in the Lightning Network and such. So
I guess connected to that, do you think you sort of answered the appropriateness side of this question, but feel free to add any thoughts there. Do you think it's appropriate and realistic for the accounting industry to be as transparent as Bitcoin?
No. And that has been a, you know, I didn't mention on the onset, but that is a big piece of tools that are being built. You know, for example, we're not necessarily in the business of wanting to become a wallet provider. You know, the actual handling and helping the handling of actual customer funds isn't really something that, you know, I'm necessarily wanting to sign up for. But you can foresee, and in the accounting world, you really have to do these coin join type of transactions at a pretty, it has to be kind of built into the base layer for a business to be able to pay a contractor or pay an employee without that employee knowing what the full stack is, right? Same with the landlord. You don't want to pay your landlord and you know how much they know how much you have. So I was actually at BitDev's last week, and a guy named River spoke about basically a coin join protocol that would allow, it would be built into whatever wallet wants to implement it, but you'd be able to, it sounded like in my, you know, non-developer brain, you know, you check a box, is like, this is a coin join transaction, and it's blinded on both sides so that you basically can't see the address where it came from. And likewise on the other way, you can't see where it's going to know exactly how much Bitcoin that person has. So I think that is very important. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is not, you know, it's not the reality with the current banking system. I can't see your bank balance if you send me an ACH. And I would say that I shouldn't, you know, I should not know that, because it potentially poses risk. You want the privacy to know. But I think on the governmental level, it's different. You know, I think it's fine, really. It's most likely fine to see what everyone has in their addresses, just because, again, there's the public entities, and then there's, you know, private individuals, private entities. So I think that's probably where I draw the line.
I think it would be incredible and provide a lot of confidence, assuming there's a reason to be confident, if you could see what all the U.S. owned, where stuff was. I think there are probably some reasons the U.S. government wouldn't want people to see where some of the money is. But I think it's just an interesting thing to think about. So another question that is maybe a little bit tougher to answer is there an ethical difference between tax evasion and fiat debasement?
So I would say, yeah, it is definitely a spicy question. I like it a lot. You know, I listen to some guys that, you know, they take, and these aren't CPAs, so, you know, we are obviously held to a different standard, but they would say, you know, there are tax protesters that, you know, that are out there that are willing to go to jail for their beliefs. And you know, a very common one that I see of, and obviously these aren't super common cases, but people who engage in this activity where they basically just refuse to file and pay taxes knowingly, and they do so again out of a protest. Most of them are doing so out of a protest of war. You know, they're just very anti-war. It's like the most common that I've seen. And so they say, I don't want to contribute to war. It just goes against my core beliefs, and so I'm going to not pay taxes. I would say those people, they fully understand the risks that are associated with doing that. And so I've always heard it said that, you know, if you have a family, it's just not the smartest thing to, I guess, you know, put yourself in that situation where you could be potentially spending years in jail just to make a point, right? But on the other side of your question, the fiat debasement, where they're stealing money from you, by just printing. There are certainly things that, there's revolutions and all kinds of things like that, right? Where you break the rules because there's a higher purpose to what you're trying to accomplish. Whether that's, the example that comes to mind for me is, what if we had not, basically rebelled against the British government and we were still under British rule. So, but I think you have to do things very carefully. And the revolution thing has to be, in my head, kind of the last resort. The thing I love about Bitcoin is that it's a very peaceful and way of transitioning away from this fiat debasement. And I love the opting out. You're just opting out of the current system. And it's this beautiful Trojan horse that's, currently making its way into the halls of Congress and DC. And I think it's a beautiful thing because generally you'd have to go fight a war. You'd have to go get violent and do all these things to try to upend a bad system like our fiat system. But with Bitcoin, we don't even have to do that. You can still pay taxes and you can still participate and also be opting out all the while into this new system that's just more fair and it levels the playing field for everyone and start transacting in that ecosystem alongside. It's almost like this transition, right? It's like I still do some of my business over here, but I'm trying to get as much of my life and business from the money sense over into the Bitcoin world because it's just a better world. Mm-hmm. I think it comes back to your question of, when people are like, oh, I'm not going to spend my Bitcoin because it's going to go up in value. And it's like, well, we need to transition to a better system. And the only way to do that is kind of like what you talked about in a few other shows, but that is making sure that the business owner has the incentive to accept Bitcoin. So that's kind of step one. But then if they do that and no one comes to pay with Bitcoin, well, then they're like, well, that didn't work. And so I don't know. Have they released any of the Stake and Shake numbers yet that you've seen?
Not that I've seen. No.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be very curious to see. I hope that they do release some figures, even if it's just new customers or whatever it might look like. But assuming that went well, which I think it probably did. I know I went on Friday with my daughter to Steak and Shake, and I hadn't been to Steak and Shake in a decade. Mm-hmm. They've closed multiple Steak and Shakes in Louisville. So all that to say, I think, sorry, to get back to your question, I think we need to transition to a different system. And so I think people have to be willing to spend their Bitcoin because you have to have an economy of people who are providing goods and services and they're accepting Bitcoin as payment and people who are willing to buy those goods and services and pay with Bitcoin. So
maybe a good final question here. And then of course we'll get to any wrap up thoughts that you might have, but what advice would you have for a business owner who's looking to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet for the first time?
I really like Zaprite. I think that getting it's all really about the tooling. Like if you understand Bitcoin, then it's just a matter of, there's obviously a few different ways that you can get your hands on Bitcoin. You can allocate some of your treasury that's currently being stashed in dollars or treasury bills or bonds. You can just use that to put it into Bitcoin, or you can start pricing some of your goods and services in Bitcoin. I really like, I'm going to forget his name. The guy you just had on from Orchestra. Is that how you say it? Orchestra?
Stephen Cole, yeah.
Stephen Cole, yeah. I really like that product that he's co-founder and CEO on where it just allows a business to DCA. I think that's really cool. But it really doesn't, in my head, it doesn't necessarily matter. Obviously, there's several options on how you can get it on your balance sheet. But you really should. You really should get it on your balance sheet. Or at least get exposure. That actually is something we can talk about as a wrapping thought too, is it on your balance sheet or isn't it a separate entity on its own balance sheet for liability purposes? But all that to say, your business, in order for it to survive, you really need to have exposure to something like Bitcoin so that you can weather all kinds of storms, whether it's, you know, debanking, which I know people are like, oh, we're past that now. It's like, well, these, you know, administrations come and go. And so you have to be prepared for whatever political climate that might be coming down the pipe, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it might be. So there's a censorship piece. There is just a pure debasement piece, and small businesses, they know that. I think when Bitcoiners were talking about inflation in like 2020 and everything was ripping and all, you know, everyone was like living large, post COVID crash or whatever. Right. I think everyone's like, oh, these crazy Bitcoiners talking about inflation, that'll never happen. Like, they're so crazy. And, you know, you never want to like rub it into someone's face, but it is, everyone is well aware of inflation now. You know, now that they've experienced the record high inflation and the compounding effect of inflation, people feel poorer, especially people who don't have assets and are basically paycheck to paycheck. So the business owner needs to figure out a way to get exposure to Bitcoin so that they can replace their equipment, you know, once it's fully, you know, fully used up and fully depreciated. How are you actually tracking to make sure you have enough capital to go replace that large equipment or finance, however you're going to get it back, you know, when you need it? So I think that's, I mean, I could say a lot of things on it, but I just think that there's a lot more tools out there now that allow you to get exposure, and you need to make sure that you're beating at least the quote unquote inflation that they report to us on a yearly basis, or, you know, year on year.
So you just forecasted some of your closing thoughts, but yeah, please share with us anything that you think is worth, you know, sharing with listeners in these final minutes, and then also let people know where they can go to find out more about Bitmint.
Sure. So I would say it's great that we have these different tools that are allowing people to start to transact in Bitcoin. But it is a headache on the back end for the accountants. It just still is, especially if you're doing things in a non-custodial way. So assuming you are getting things sent to your own address within your own cold storage setup, the accounting for that kind of stuff is difficult. And versus you could use something like Strike, and then they give you statements and you know, I'm not fully familiar with how Strike works, but assuming something like either Strike or Coinbase, where they're holding the funds for you, they're giving you statements, and the accounting is a little bit easier that way. That contrasted with someone who's like doing it in a more self-sovereign way of, you know, they hold their own keys and they need the accounting done for that stuff. So that's really what we're focused on at Bitmint, is helping people who are accepting Bitcoin as payment, and people who are holding it on their balance sheet and need to mark it to market, you know, once a month or once a quarter. Because I just think if you go to a business owner, you're like, this is better money. We're going to save you a lot of money on the transaction fees that Visa and MasterCard pay, or that they charge right now. I think a business owner would be like, this is great, and so I'm going to save all this money. But then they go to their accountant and say it's a non-Bitcoiner accountant. And that person's like, well, you know, we charge by the hour, and this is going to create all this more work for us, and we don't fully even understand it. So our monthly is going to go up by X amount. And then the business owner says, well, am I really even saving that money? This seems like such a headache to make this transition. And now I'm paying my accountant the savings that I thought I was going to get. So what we're trying to do at Bitmint is basically make that a seamless process. And right now the bridge is to get that info into QuickBooks a little bit more in a more automated way. But I think our long-term vision is, let's just build a QuickBooks competitor that is Bitcoin native. And so it talks to Bitcoin, all the different inputs of Bitcoin, whether it's Lightning or eCash and on-chain, as well as pulls in your fiat, you know, banking, credit card kind of stuff. And the last little bit that I'll say on that is the tax piece. You know, fingers crossed we get something across the line where there's a de minimis rule. And what that means is anything below a threshold that's not reportable, not taxable for Bitcoin. Or, you know, it'd be great if they just took away, they treated it as a currency and they got rid of the cap gains altogether. So yep. We're having to think about that as well, because it's a reality right now. It's like when you go spend your Bitcoin at Steak and Shake, you know, letter of the law, you are supposed to pay cap gains tax on that transaction, whether people are, do it or not. So, yeah.
Mm, perfect. And bitmint.co is the website. Is that correct?
Yes. Bitmint.co. You can also email me. It's jordan@bitmint.co. If you are interested at all, you know, we're really trying to, you know, educate accountants and also any business owner that wants to earn in Bitcoin, and, but they still need to pay some of their bills in dollars. We'd be happy to, you know, try to onboard them and get them set up where the accounting backside is seamless and they get all their reports on time and for the same cost as what they're paying right now.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me or Jordan, you can find those links down in the show notes. And be sure to check out bitmint.co for your Bitcoin accounting. As always, keep building, keep growing. Until next time, keep living and leading well.